You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our conversation in the Set Apart to Serve series today. We're heading to the English District. Where is the English District? Everywhere.
It's everywhere.
We're going to have that conversation in just a moment with Bishop Hardy. Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, Bishop of the English District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Pastor Hardy, welcome back to The Coffee Hour.
It's great to be with you again.
We spent some time, we had a fun series talking about leadership, your great leadership book. And today we get to talk a little bit more about your formation as a pastor and how the English District is also helping raise up pastors and other church workers for the church to serve in the future as well. Let's start with your story. And I know we talked a little bit about this in the leadership series, but let's go back to the beginning of how you became a pastor. Where did it begin? Where was that seed planted?
Yeah, it was third grade at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church in Michigan. Pastor Ralph Fisher told me I'd be a pastor. And basically, I told him I was going to play football for the Detroit Lions. And I kind of laughed it off. Now, this year, I think I told you this during the leadership series. I mean, this year would be a different story about playing for the Lions. Back then, it wasn't so glorious. And so he just stayed on me. He always referenced the fact that I was going to serve God in the church. He saw something in me, which, by the way, I can speak about this in a little bit. I get to see in other people now as a pastor. And I think that's probably the hallmark, I think, of Set Apart to Serve, is those of us in the office identifying others who have the gift or the Spirit resting on them and encouraging them to go into ministry. So I was set apart by my pastor from about 1988 until I went to college. And it wasn't until my junior year that I decided to go to seminary, but he was relentless with his identifying me as a future pastor.
What did that formation look like for you from the time that you figured out that that was actually what the Spirit was calling you to do? What did that formation look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, look, Pastor Fisher put me in front of the congregation in every way that a young 16 to 18 year old boy could be. We did a passion play for Lent one year and I was the judge. I got to stand in the pulpit and wear his cassock. I don't think that was by chance, by the way. I do believe that he chose me to play that part and gave me his cassock and put me in the pulpit during that drama to kind of foreshadow or let me feel what it was like to stand in that place. And he always expected me. And by the way, my brother, Tim, I don't know. I think you might know my brother. Tim is the vice principal of Lutheran High North here in Detroit, Michigan, or in Macomb. And my brother has been serving in the church his whole ministry, too, as a commission worker. And so it's not just me in the pastoral office. It was also my brother. And so we both were consistently expected. There wasn't even a choice, really. I never remember a time where Pastor Fisher did not expect us to serve in the church, whether it was a young man or when we got into college or when I decided to go to the seminary or my brother decided to go into Lutheran teaching.
What words would you use to describe your relationship with your pastor or your pastor to you during those early formative years as a youth?
Yeah, I can tell you there's only one man in my life more influential in my spiritual growth, and that was my father. So my pastor was, for me, I mean, he did everything in preparation for my service. I won't depart from here physically, but I'm literally looking across on my bookshelf and there's a picture of him there. So, I mean, it remains even to this day. Pastor Fisher used to have a catchphrase of faithful, 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 or suffer, suffer, suffer. That was his kind of catchphrase whenever he preached or taught. As a theologian, I actually questioned the theology of it, but it really got me always because Pastor Fisher would remind us, faithful, faithful, faithful. You know, that was his mantra. And it was just, again, I don't remember a part of my life from about fifth grade till today where Pastor Fisher's influence on consistently calling me to account to use my gifts in the church without an expectation that I could say no. I mean, there was no choice for me. And I don't say that in a way where I was resistant. I say that because I never had a feeling other than this is what I'm supposed to do.
Would you say that in your relationship with him as a youth, that you asked questions, that you that you could go to him with any questions, especially about, well, not just about your faith, but also about church work as well? Did that ever cross your mind, like asking questions about church work?
Well, certainly. I mean, I'll give you a little anecdote or a little point, a little story to prove this point. We used to talk about me serving in the church quite a bit. I went to college. He got sick with cancer towards my seminary years. But before I even went to the seminary, Pastor Fisher had already deposited $3,000 in the seminary account with my name, which I didn't learn about until after he died. His son told my father. But the point is, his mindset was always, I'm going there. And so as I started getting older, and once I declared for the seminary, that's when he opened up and just told me that, you know, this is where God was leading me. And he took the approach always that he was right, meaning, you know, there was no chance that I was doing anything but being a pastor. And so when I declared to go to the seminary my junior year at Concordia, Wisconsin, he just said to me, well, I was waiting for you to do this. I don't know why it's taken you this long. You know, so I mean, to him, this was my path. And again, I don't ever feel like I was forced into it. I just feel like I've always been kind of destined for it. And partly because my pastor has never done anything but hold me accountable to using those gifts that God has provided to me, you know, in terms of faithfulness, teaching, preaching, loving the neighbor, the whole nine yards. And by the way, I'll have you know, I do that to this very day. On Sunday, I taught at my church, Our Savior Lutheran Church in Heartland, and we have a man there who I call out every time I teach. And we were talking this week about something, and I just said to him, oh, I know what it is. I said to him, we have 12 men going to the seminary this fall from the English district, so I don't want to jump ahead, Andy. I know that's going to be a part of the next couple of questions. But I said to him, when are you scheduling your interview? Oh, and he just had his fourth child, and he always tells me it's up to his wife. So I just got that out of the way, and I've talked to his wife, right? So I do the same thing that Pastor Fisher is, and I'm number 52. Pastor Fisher had 53 seminarians before he died. I'm number 52. I have six. I'm working on number seven. I got a long way to go to catch up to Pastor Fisher, but it is my intention. Life is a competition as far as I'm concerned, and I got to pick up the pace.
You're talking about the value of those relationships that you had in your life as you were considering seminary, as other people were telling you that this was a thing for you. How do you see that now, as now you're in a leadership role and having influence on people? How do you see those relationships being important for you in your role?
Yeah, look, I take the same approach. Every congregation I go to, every church I'm at, every time I'm around lay people, whether it's my own or other congregations within my district or other districts, if I see a young man, a middle-aged man, an older man, where I see what Pastor Fisher saw in me, the Holy Spirit resting on him with the gift, I don't hesitate to ask him when he's going to go to the seminary. I don't hesitate to encourage him that it's a path for him. Because as I said, as I get older, I see what Pastor Fisher saw in me. You get to see the gift of the Spirit resting on men. And by the way, and women and other men for teaching offices. It's not just the pastoral office. I mean, I do this for all church work, but I mean the pastoral office for sure. I had a 10-year-old boy at a congregation about 2 weeks ago, and his parents told me, you know, he wants to be a pastor. And so I just hit the gas pedal with him. I told him, I said, you know, when you're ready to go to the seminary, you let me know, you know, I'll advocate for you. You know, every time I see him, he always tells me I'm looking forward to it. You know, so I take the same approach that my pastor took. And that is, when I see the Spirit resting on those individuals, I call it out and I am just relentless about it. And I'll give you a quick analogy to that one. One of my members from Pittsburgh at Peace Lutheran Church served with me as an elder. He was with me side by side in many of the ministries I had there for 20 years. I've been on him for 10 years. This fall, he will now go to the seminary, and I've been gone from that church for 3 years. And so when he told me he was going to go to the seminary, I just was overjoyed, partly because he was going, but more than that, because I was relentless and he didn't win. That's the way I look at it. You know,
we're talking today with the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy. He's the Bishop of the English District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. We'll learn more about Set Apart to Serve and the English District in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're continuing our conversation in the Set Apart to Serve series today. We're chatting with the Bishop of the English District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy. Pastor Hardy, you've shared with us a great story of how the Lord brought you into the ministry and why it's personally important for you to encourage others to consider church work as well. Help us understand the English District. For those who might not be familiar with the English District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, maybe just a brief history of the English District and who the English District is today.
That's going to be very tough when you use the word brief, but let's just put it this way. The English District was brought in as a district to the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod in 1911. For those who don't know, the English District is not a new phenomenon. We've been over 100 years of service to the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod joyfully. As we reside as a non-geographic district with churches in now 20, soon to be 21 states in the next month, where we're planting two new churches, I'll leave the state unspoken of right now to alleviate any controversy there, because, you know, some of my geographic brothers, district presidents, you know, they don't like the fact that I have no borders. The English District has no borders. And so when we have an opportunity to plant a church, we go. And so the English District is a very, very missional district. We see the calling to speak the gospel in all languages where we're able to do it. And the truth of the matter is we're trying to create an ethos of our congregations where we are encouraging folks to church work, especially men, to the ministry. That's self-evident. As I said earlier, this fall, the English District will be producing 12 men in the seminary residentially. And that's not counting SMPs that we might potentially have. That is just our residential seminarians. And I know that my admin told me yesterday that she has another interview scheduled. They'll have a 13th potential interview for men for the ministry. Now, I've been told there's going to be roughly 100, a little bit more, in the fall of this coming year. So when you have 35 districts and our district is producing 12 of those 100 plus men, I'll take those odds any day.
That is quite a group that you're building up. Is this something that is more recent? I know we've been doing the Set Apart to Serve initiative for a little while now.
It's been a minute.
Is this something that has been the legacy of the English District for a long time?
I mean, I've been bishop and president for 9 years, and we have men who have gone to the seminary, I believe, all nine of those years. I believe, and I'd have to double check this, but I believe my admin told me last year we had 9 or 10 go to the seminary. So, I mean, this is not just a phenomenon year where it's one off. We are consistently producing church workers, and especially men for the ministry. And I hold this up for my guys. I talk about this. We'll be having our pastor's conference April 30th through May 2nd at Advent Lutheran Church in Zionsville, Indiana. Dr. Rass will be speaking about the 50th anniversary of Seminex and kind of the English District's impact or contribution in a negative way, I guess one would say, during those years. But since the Seminex issue that occurred, the English District has really focused on trying to encourage church work preparation, especially those to serve in the office of the Holy Ministry.
What does that look like practically for congregations, for circuit visitors and pastors? What are some practical ways that the English District and the congregations and others in the English District are going about to encourage men and women to consider full-time church work?
Yeah, and I answer that not to be flippant, but it's exactly what I told you in the story about me becoming a pastor. I encourage my pastors to be relentless with those who the Spirit rests on. Mm-hmm. It's an active thing. You see, for a pastor to encourage young men and others in the church to serve in church work is an active thing. It doesn't just happen because of your presence. It has to be overt. It has to be intentional. And for my 9 years, I have just called on my pastors in my district to be overt in raising up servant leaders in the church, workers for the faith, proclaimers of the gospel, and especially pastors. I mean, I have to tell you, there is nothing that brings me greater joy in the office of bishop and president than A, being able to say that we're sending 12 men this fall to the seminary, B, being able to say that we've gotten that many church workers, you know, year over year over year, that we have, you know, multiple years of several church workers. And then C, the highlight of being a district president for me, I think my colleagues on the council would agree, is being at the seminaries during call night and watching these men receive their call and participating as a bishop and president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and then receiving those men into our districts. That night, when those guys get that call and we have that district meeting, the radiance of joy on their face, only to have to be ordained and installed and then have to start dealing with God's people, right? So that night is probably the purest form of expressions of joy for men. And as a DP, I got to tell you, when the day comes that I no longer will serve as district president, the thing I'll miss the most is call night, unequivocally.
What kind of culture have you built up, have your district presidents and your congregations built up to have this mindset of constantly encouraging young men and young women to consider church work vocations?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I said earlier, I'm odd. I know that. And I accept that as a gift from God. You know, I think there is something to be said about competition. I really do. And I think there's a healthy spirit amongst us to hold each other accountable, to be competitive. As I said, I dare you to find another district that's sending 10 plus men 2 years in a row to the seminaries. And that's not to say it's not happening. I'm sure that there's other districts that has happened even maybe this year or next year or last year. But on a consistent basis, I mean, for me, I think it's a competition. And I think healthy competition amongst brothers and sisters is something that God, you know, calls us to do, because we rise to the bar that is set for us. I think one of the things in the church that we have to do a better job at is set the bar higher. You know, we've got to push ourselves to use the gifts that God has given to us. Too often we just accept mediocrity and say we're doing great. For me, mediocrity is not good enough. You know, there's a difference between good and great. And I look at this as that whole Matthew 25 parable. You've heard me speak about this in the leadership book. You know, the Matthew 25 parable, to whom much is given, much is expected. And so for me, it's a competition. It drives me, because I want to be the best at it. And the only way to be the best at this is to push as many people that we can encourage to go to the seminaries and serve church working.
It's a totally unrelated question. It has nothing to do with what you said. How did your career as wrestling impact your outlook on what you do today as a bishop and pastor?
Well, you know, all jokes aside, but it's serious, but it's going to sound comedic. You know, the Thunderdome mentality of two men enter, one man leaves. This is what wrestling is all about. Two men go on the mat and one walks off with his hand raised and one walks off as the one who lost. And I got to tell you, the greatest thing I could have ever done in life was become a wrestler, because it drives me to compete, because I know when I was on the wrestling mat, if I won, it was the gifts God gave me. If I lost, it was because of me, meaning I didn't do enough. I didn't do the right thing. I might have made a mistake, and I've lost plenty of matches, but I have won plenty as well. And so that drive to be the best and to use the gifts God has given you is something that I can never ever repay, that wrestling gave to me. And frankly, my boys have it. My two sons have it. My daughter has it, even though she hasn't wrestled. She's playing soccer now. But, you know, it's just, I have a mantra as a parish pastor and as a district president: use the gifts God has given to you at the best and highest levels. Otherwise, what is the good of God giving you that gift? I think that is something as Christians we have got to do a better job at. He provides us with gifts and he expects us to use them for his kingdom and his glory. And shame on us if we don't do.
I think that's a great way to encourage people into church work, though. And I see why you're so effective at it with that mindset of identifying those gifts that God has given you. And if those gifts mean that you would serve well in a church work vocation, then so be it. And that should be the path that you go on. I see why that is effective for you and for the English district. You've shared some stories. What other stories do you have of yourself or your district presidents, your congregations identifying those young men and women or second career men and women who will go on to serve in the church?
You know, I actually think it's not quite as hard as a lot of people make it. There's a lot of people that I've come across in parishes across the English district and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that have passion and joy for the gospel, for serving in their church, for being involved in leadership in the church, for coming to church. I have a man in my congregation by the name of Stan, my current congregation. He comes very early on Sunday, far earlier than pretty much everybody else in the church. And this last Sunday I preached and I walked into the congregation. Now he's up in age, so he's not a candidate probably for this. But he started telling me a story about how he can't miss church. And the older he gets, the harder it is to physically, you know, come all the time. And he said to me, he said he doesn't drive at night anymore because he's, you know, as he's getting older, it's becoming harder to drive at night. And that's the one time that he doesn't come to church is when we have a night service. And he bemoaned it to me. And I told him, I understand. I said, I don't have the option of using that as a reason I don't come to church. I have to get somebody to drive me if I can't do that, because if I'm not here, right? And he started laughing at that. But I mean, that's a point at which his passion, if he was 15, 20, 30 years younger, would give me a clue. This is a guy I need to spend some time with and encourage to the ministry. Because his love for being in God's house, hearing God's word, is self-evident. And I don't think it's rocket science. You run across these people in the church where the Spirit rests on. This is what I was alluding to earlier with Pastor Fisher saw in me. You can see the Spirit resting on God's people. It's at that point when you see the Spirit resting on him, you must drive to encourage service. I mean, that's just the way that I've lived. It's the way it's happened to me, and I think it's the way it needs to happen to all.
How is Set Apart to Serve a resource to help you and the English district form and recruit church workers?
Yeah, well, the English district was one of the first districts, I think, if you talk to a Brother Bonnick, to step up and want to be a district, you know, that's a pilot district for this, and to be involved in Set Apart to Serve. And, you know, I think it's a great program. Once again, I think we've got to hold a high, high standard. I think that, you know, for instance, 10 men from each district. That'd be a great goal, I think. That'd be 350 men to the ministry in 1 year. If every district president took it upon themselves to say, look, my district's going to commit to encouraging 10 men and helping them get to the seminary, we would have a whole lot less pastoral shortages, flat out. I mean, my class, when I got out in 2000, had 43, I believe. You know, my pastor's class had like 343 when he graduated back in the 50s, I think it was. So you can see the difference in numbers. But if the 35 districts committed to 10 men every year, we wouldn't have too much of a problem.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, Bishop of the English District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Pastor Hardy, thank you so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour.
It's a joy and a privilege. Thank you.
You can learn more about Set Apart to Serve by visiting lcms.org/SAS. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.